the shepherd-hearted love of Jesus. The text is John chapter 10. Verse 1 of John chapter 10 starts with, "Very truly I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber." Well, that's how this discourse with the Pharisees begins. But what is Jesus talking about? And why is he saying it to them? Well, let's explore these questions. And as we do, we're going to explore some of the most rich, most meaningful, most comforting verses in the entire Bible. Verses that let us peer through a window and give us a view into both the heart of Jesus and the very nature of our relationship with him. Speaking figuratively, we will have the great privilege to tread over some of the most lovely ground and follow in the very footsteps of the Good Shepherd and his beloved flock. In this discourse in John chapter 10, Jesus is speaking to a mixed crowd of listeners, some disciples, some curious onlookers, and most specifically, Jesus is addressing the Pharisees. And as we've explored in previous messages, the Pharisees were the spiritual leaders of the day, spiritual leaders who were known for their love of money, even to the point of taking homes from widows. They loved the honor, respect, and power that their position gave them. And they replaced much of the Word of God with the oppressive traditions of their own rabbis, and they enforced these traditions ruthlessly. They were supposed to be shepherds of God's flock. Oh, true, they were happy to drive the sheep, to fleece the sheep, even to abuse the sheep, but they didn't care for the sheep. And Jesus comes along, and he's very popular because he cares for people. He heals people. He loves people. As shepherds, the Pharisees should be leading the flock to Jesus. Instead, they want to kill him. So Jesus has some very important things to say to these Pharisees and to us as well. In this discourse, he uses two illustrations about himself to help everyone understand who he is and what he's called to do. The first illustration, or metaphor, is that of a gate. He's saying that he is the gate for the flock of God. The purpose of a gate is to let the right people in and keep the wrong people out, so that the flock remains safe and properly cared for. Because a flock is precious to Jesus. The second illustration is that of a shepherd. That's the one I want to focus on today. This intimate shepherd-sheep relationship is from another time and another culture. But Jesus lived in a pastoral society, and it resonated with the people of his day. These things he's describing about the shepherd-sheep relationship were all commonly witnessed by his audience. So let's follow Jesus' train of thought. Verse 2, he says, "The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." He calls them by name. Note that. "And leads them out." Note that also. Verse 4. "When he's brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice." He goes on ahead of them and they follow. All this is very important. He goes ahead, he calls, he leads, they follow. Verse 5. "But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice." This is very important that we get the right picture here, the right understanding, because Jesus is calling himself a shepherd, and he's calling us his flock. So if we misunderstand the relationship that Jesus is describing, it's going to do damage to our relationship with God, especially since what he's describing is very foreign to us. In the Western world we grew up in, the shepherd-sheep relationship is very different from what is described here. I know that because I grew up on a sheep ranch. Other than in rare occasions in the Western world, a shepherd would not call and lead his sheep, but rather he would drive the sheep from behind. The shepherd would have his sheepdog with him, usually a border collie, and he would position himself at the very opposite end of where he wanted the sheep to go. And then he'd start making noise, maybe even waving his arms, because what propels the sheep forward is fear of the shepherd and what the shepherd might do. And what keeps the flock together is a sheepdog who the sheep fear even more than the shepherd, because a sheepdog will nip them with his teeth. So if the sheep are not going in the right direction or they're not staying together, the shepherd sends the sheepdog around the flock. The sheep on the outer edges of the flock will then run from the dog toward the main body of the flock, and so they stay bunched together and moving in the right direction. Fear compels the sheep. That's the Western world's motto of herding sheep. But in the Middle East, especially during the time of Jesus, the relationship of sheep and shepherd was so different, so opposite. It was a relationship based on trust and familiarity. The shepherd lived with the flock and was intimately acquainted with each lamb, so much so that many flocks could be gathered together at a watering hole or stream, all mingled together. But when the time of parting came, each shepherd would set out in a different direction home. Each shepherd would have their own distinct call, and as they walked, they called, and as they called, the sheep that belonged to each shepherd followed that familiar call, that familiar voice, and if you witnessed it, you could see lines of sheep going in all different directions, each sheep following their trusted shepherd. And see how important it is to understand the difference. If we have a Western world idea of the sheep-shepherd relationship, and we hear that Jesus is our shepherd and we are his sheep, that's not particularly good news. Not at all. But in Jesus' day, in Jesus' culture, trust, dependence, and familiarity moved the sheep from pasture to pasture, not fear. These sheep aren't afraid of being close to the shepherd. If they fear anything, they fear not being close enough. It's like they're thinking, where's the shepherd? Gotta keep up with the shepherd. Gotta be close to the shepherd. And everything will be okay. And it is. I don't know if sheep love like humans do. If so, they loved the shepherd. There was certainly affection and familiarity and dependence. In the Western world, you can call the sheep all you want. They may even know your voice, but the sheep aren't going to come. Unless maybe you have hay in your hand, and even then they won't get too close. They keep their distance. They won't let you touch them. Unless you've gained their trust by personal, close relationship. Like with the song, Mary Had a Little Lamb, or what you might find today in petting zoos. If Jesus were talking to us today and giving us an illustration of his relationship to us, I think he would talk about the relationship of people with their pets. Where shepherds of old had their precious lambs, we have our beloved pets. And that's where we can better relate. You pet lovers know what I'm talking about. That tender, gentle love you have for your dear four-footed children, and how your heart goes out to them when they're in pain or afraid. You'd risk your life to save your precious pet without thinking twice about it. I know you would. Well, that's the closeness that shepherds had with their lambs in the old world. In 2 Samuel 12, verse 3, Nathan the prophet once told King David the story of a man and his sheep. He said, he raised it, and it grew up with him and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. I don't want to get off track by going into the context of that. I mention it only to show that shepherds in the old world loved their lambs, much like we love our pets today. So, next time you gaze adoringly into the eyes of your furry child, remember that it's a mere reflection, and a poor one of at that, of Jesus' love for you. Next, Jesus says something so profound. Verse 10. First, he says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. In this verse, Jesus is describing the Pharisees and their ministry to the people, the flock of God. That's what the Pharisees have been doing with their false teachings, their self-importance and pride, their harsh treatment of the flock of God. But in contrast, Jesus says, and this is the part I want to get to, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Oh, what contrast! Life, fullness of life. Jesus has fullness of life, and he came to give that fullness of life to all who would come to him, because life, abundant life, and life to the full is and always has been in God, and Jesus is the great reconciler between God and mankind. The Pharisees were supposed to be leading people to the heart of God, and instead they've been driving them far from him. And Jesus comes to bring the people back to the heart of God. The Pharisees brought death. Jesus brings life. And the Pharisees do everything they can to keep the people from Jesus and Jesus from the people. Because if the people have Jesus, they won't need the Pharisees. And the Pharisees will lose their power over the people and their control of the people. And the money of the people, and the honor of the people, all of which they crave and thrive on. Then verse 11, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Verse 14, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. Verse 17, the reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. Four times, he says the same thing, I lay down my life. He willingly does this. He's talking to the very people who want to take his life from him, and he's letting them know that it won't be taken from him because he willingly lays it down. But there is that little word there, for. And that little word means everything. Packed into that little word, for, is the love of the ages. An everlasting love. The greatest love story ever told. He didn't lay down his life for the cosmos or for distant worlds or even for the angels. He laid down his life for the flock. His beloved sheep, his precious lambs. He laid down his life for you and me. Jesus had said, no greater love has anyone than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. John 15, verse 13. And that is just what he did. And that is also what he calls us to emulate. Jesus doesn't need us to lay down our lives for him. But he does need us to lay down our lives for his flock, for one another. We lay it down in bits and pieces every time we set aside our comfort to comfort someone else, every time we take from our time and give that time or resources to help someone else. Jesus said in Matthew 25, verse 40, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. He has called us to care for his flock. It's a job that we all share in one degree or another. And what then does all this mean for Christian leadership? Every Christian leader, whatever area they are leading in or mentoring in or overseeing, no matter how small they think their job is, it is very large. It is very important because we each represent the Good Shepherd, and we do it in his name, and people will view Jesus by what they see in us, As I heard evangelist Floyd McClung say way back in 1975, if people don't like us, they won't like our Jesus. We all fall short. That's true. But let's at least know what we're aiming at, who we're aiming to emulate. We should continually study the Good Shepherd, continually looking to the model of the Good Shepherd that we will properly represent him to others. The Pharisees drove the flock from behind. Jesus went on ahead, lovingly called them, and they lovingly followed. That's why in 1 Peter 5, verse 3, Peter tells elders not to be lording it over those entrusted to them, that's driving, but instead being examples to the flock, that's leading. Fear will get the flock from one place to another, that's true enough. But what a miserable journey. What a wretched Christianity that is. Worst of all, if being driven by fear is the only shepherding they know, such sheep will never get to know the heart of their shepherd. They'll never know the sheer joy of resting with him beside quiet waters, or eating from his hand in green pastures, or having their soul refreshed just by being in his presence. He'll just be this scary authority figure that they will all want to keep their distance from. But that's not how Jesus is or wants to be with every single lamb in his flock. No matter how unimportant you might think yourselves to be, you are precious to the Good Shepherd, precious enough to die for. And he lovingly calls you to follow him. So let's conclude this message by praying Psalm 23 as a prayer. Lord, you are our shepherd. We lack nothing. You make us lay down in green pastures. You lead us beside quiet waters. You refresh our soul. You guide us along the right paths for your namesake. Even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear no evil, for you are with us. Your rod and your staff, they comfort us. You prepare a table before us in the presence of our enemies. You anoint our heads with oil. Our cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow us all the days of our lives, and we will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.